Ohio seniors make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Empire is no longer, and the Beskar has returned. When one chooses to walk the way of the Mandalore, you are both hunter and prey. How can one be a coward if one chooses this way of life? Have you ever removed your helmet?
No.
Has it ever been removed by others?
Never.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica. This week, we're covering The Mandalorian, Season 1, Episode 3, Chapter 3, The Sin.
The sin bin.
What is the sin? Is it leaving Baby Yoda or going back for him?
He broke the code, man.
So it's going back for him?
Yeah. I think that's true. I think that's correct. Going back.
Well, before we get into the episode, I wanted to mention a couple of things. First off, I was just thinking about how this show, I was talking to Chris in chat about it, but it actually has a little bit more of a Ash vs. Evil Dead feel than I thought, because it has some things in common. It has shorter episodes. It has this main character who's cool, except he gets beat to a pulp every week and comes from the 80s, you know, something we liked in the 80s. And it's kind of straightforward and fun. And I don't know, it's a little bit similar.
Yeah, that's deep. True.
Maybe a bit. I mean, although this episode was almost 40 minutes, right? It was a little longer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess
but
so.
Still.
So I said I was going to have a Star Wars question to start out the show every week. I thought this week I would ask, what's your favorite Star Wars movie and your least favorite?
Oh, man. You're never going to prepare us for these, are you?
That's hard.
Yeah. Rich, you go first.
I am going to pick Empire Strikes Back.
For your favorite, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to express why on the spot, but the first thing I thought of were the giant walking AT-ATs in that snow field scene. When I was a kid and I watched that, I was the coolest thing on Earth.
I remember, too, just being so glad after the three-year wait to get back to those characters.
Oh, yeah, that's
just
true, too.
So
yeah.
Awesome.
Well, you know, if you'd asked me for most of my Star Wars loving life, I would have said the same thing, Empire Strikes Back. And, you know, sitting here right now, probably that is still true. But I liked The Force Awakens so much that I think it's very, very close to being my favorite. So, yeah, it's a tough call. It's a tough call between those two for me.
Yeah. Can we just say all of them?
No.
No, that's not allowed.
Yeah, mine's changed. For the longest time, mine was Return of the Jedi, and that came out, of course, before the internet, and so your opinion wasn't shaped by all the haters, and so I never heard anyone dissing on the Ewoks until way, way later, and it started to infect my thinking a little bit, but just a little. I still like that movie a lot. I don't think that Ewoks are as bad as some people say, but anyway, I still think, looking back, that probably the original Star Wars is my favorite.
Yeah, New Hope. Something else.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm with you about Ewoks. Like, I didn't dislike them at all as a kid. I thought they were great.
Yeah,
and only when I grew up a little bit and again heard people kind of talking about them in a negative that I started to think maybe, but still, I really have no problem with them all. Yeah,
same.
Well, we were all kids. That's what they were for kids. It was probably the grown-ups that were the ones who weren't too impressed.
Yeah, like, oh, they're so dorky. And even now, I mean, there's kids who grew up watching Phantom Menace, and they love it. Not all of them, but some of them.
Even Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, right.
It seems so unfathomable, but there are plenty of kids that grew up with that, and that's their thing.
Yeah. These kids. So, speaking of that, what's your least favorite, Rich?
Least favorite's got to be this last one that just came out where...
Last Jedi.
Luke, yeah, died in self-pity on a rock.
Oh.
Didn't like that at all.
I'd say there's a small chance that... I think it's very, very small, but that he might not have died and he'll be back in the last movie here.
I'm like really crossing my fingers that he'll at least do something in this next
I think he'll be a Force ghost. There's that. I would say there's like a 99% chance he'll come back as a Force ghost and a 1% chance that J.J. Abrams will just retcon it and say he teleported away somewhere else.
Yeah. If anything, if J.J. Abrams can do anything, it would be something like that, right? I have a feeling he might do a few things like that in this last movie that comes out in a month.
Which we're going to cover on this podcast, I think.
Yeah. It boils down to I'm just having a hard time letting go. I mean, we've lost, you know, Han Solo. We're probably going to lose Leia. We lost Luke. I'm just having a hard time letting go of my childhood heroes. That's what it really boils down to. It's me. It's not really the movies. It's me.
Well, when I heard they were doing more Star Wars movies, which I always thought they would because they made so much money, and that the original cast was coming back, I thought, oh, that is so cool. We're going to get to see them all together. And then we didn't get to see them all together. We got to see Leia and Han, but I wanted to see the whole band back together, even if they were kind of in the background, you know? So I feel like that's a big missed opportunity. But I loved The Last Jedi. I know those movies are polarizing. I loved it way more than Force Awakens, but that's my personal opinion.
That's funny. The Last Jedi is sort of lower on my list as well, too. But in, you know, at the risk of taking a really unpopular choice, I'm actually not as huge a fan of Rogue One.
Ooh, oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, we've got some varying opinions here.
Yeah, Rogue One didn't really feel all that Star Wars-y to me, at least parts of it. Like, it's a Star Wars movie. I still enjoyed it. I had a great time watching it, and I've watched it more than once, you know, since it was released. But, for some reason, it just didn't feel the same as the others, and I had a hard time latching onto it as part of this whole universe. So
I agree it did have a different feel to it, but I thought as a movie, it really worked well, so I was okay with that. And then watching it a second time, I was just so impressed with some of the battle sequences. They're some of the most impressive ever.
Yeah, that's what I like about it, actually, the battle sequences. It's kind of some of the other stuff that didn't work as well. And then just as a side note, I liked Solo better than most people. So I don't know what that says.
I liked it okay. I think I liked it better than most, too.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say none of us hate any of the movies, right?
Oh, no, definitely not.
So is Rogue One your least favorite, Chris?
I think so, yeah. Rogue One's my least favorite.
Mine's got to be Attack of the Clones. There's just so much to groan at for me in that. And I think the prequels, there's some things that are underappreciated about them, the originality and the world building and the beauty of the designs and everything. But what's wrong with them for me just kills it for me. The wooden acting and the horrible dialogue and the long, boring sequences, and just even going back now, the CGI looks really dated. So there's just a lot that's just like, oh man, nice try.
You know what? I should clarify. Like, when I was thinking about this just now, I didn't even consider those three because I almost feel like they're just not part of anything. I thought they were all so terrible. So they're in a separate category by themselves, the prequel trilogy. But I don't think any of them are very good. The wooden acting, like you said, is just the worst.
Yeah. But I mean, some of the lightsaber sequences are totally awesome with Darth Maul and stuff. I love that. I mean, the Yoda one I thought was kind of dumb. He looked like a character out of Looney Tunes or something.
And I know Jason and I didn't appreciate them trying to explain what causes the Force.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a big problem.
And they may be touching back on that again with Mandalorian.
We might be. I think so. Yeah. But things like the pod race in the first movie, I thought were pretty good. You know, like they did that sort of stuff pretty well. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's enough pre-show chit chat. Let's get into our top three highlights for this week's episode. Chapter 3, The Sin. Did you guys like it?
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. Liked it
overall. I thought it was a great episode. We got to see some more of Mando's background. I think most of us are relieved to know that the child is in safe hands now. I do have a small issue with it, though, which is one of my highlights, so we'll get to that in a minute. But I'm not sure what to make of how Mando, you know, how Mando took the bounty, and then he went and got better armor and weapons, and then goes back with said better armor and weapons and just takes the child. I mean, was he really conflicted, or was he just being kind of a dick and planned to have it all?
I think he was trying to talk himself into just going about his business. And then when he reached down and that missing knob from the lever just reminded him about Baby Yoda, and that's what turned it. I don't think he'd planned it the whole time. He was getting ready to take off.
He is a bounty hunter.
Yeah. he was on his way. I thought it was a great episode. I thought we had a couple of really fantastic action sequences, and it gave us some insight into Mandalorian culture and history and clarified Mando's character a little bit, and it set up, I think, his motivations for the rest of the season. Yeah. So
this was a pivotal episode for him changing direction into probably what this whole series is going to be about. Yeah. It's been preamble up till now, kind of.
Or better or worse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay, let's get into our top three. Who wants to go first?
I can do it this week if you want. Yep. And so my first one is Mandalorian culture, as I was just mentioning there. Now, some of this may already be known. I'm not sure, honestly, but it was all reinforced really well in this episode. So a few of the things that I learned or just had kind of brought to the forefront for me was things like that the Mandalorians are extremely loyal to each other. Yeah. And we see this in how they react to Mando bringing back the Imperial steel. You know, like he feels like they're betraying him by working for or with former Imperials. And they even have this physical confrontation about it. But by the end, it's come full circle and they really prove how loyal they are to him, right? By saving him in the final battle there.
Yeah. And that one character, he in particular was the one that challenged Mando, and the armorer woman, the blacksmith or whatever she is, had a great point that, hey, the Empire's gone. Don't you want to get this Beskar steel back? And I was like, oh, yeah. But anyway, that guy was right by Mando's side at the end with his machine gun saying, get out of here. I'll hold him off. So, yeah, he totally shifted around and became his ally.
Yeah, and I think her point there was, you know, they have to realize that by collecting this Beskar steel, it's called, right? That's one of the things they can do to revitalize their whole society, if you want to call it that, like Mandalorian culture or ways.
Yeah.
It's one of the things they can use.
That was also John Favreau, by the way. Did you know that? His voice.
No, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Paz Vizsla. The Mandalorian that had confronted him.
Oh, the big guy?
Yeah, it was his voice. Yeah, him doing the voice.
Did we know he was going to play a character in this?
I didn't know.
No, I don't think I did either. But in terms of culture, you know, the Mandalorians, they respect their history a lot. They're deeply concerned about their future, of course. It's not an accident that Mando mentions that they should save some of that steel for the foundlings, you know, the children of the tribe. That's been really important to them.
Yeah.
And then the insignia that he ultimately turns down, but I started thinking, well, obviously that's super important to them. It's very meaningful. They have to earn it. And he didn't want it because it wasn't an honorable kill, as he said.
I was thinking it's kind of like a tattoo. Like, I never got any tattoos because I don't want to be stuck with something that I might not like later on. And I'm like, a mud horn? I don't know. No, it wasn't an honorable kill. Yeah.
Right. I could see myself with a Mudhorn tattoo, maybe, yeah, but I don't have any yet.
Yeah. All right, we're all getting them.
yeah. Oh, hey, great idea. Anyways, yeah, just those are some of the things I noticed and how we, again, if they're all, they're sort of already kind of known elements to Mandalorian culture, but I liked how they expanded on it a bit in this episode and gave us that information because it all helps to understand why he does things and, mm-hmm. and how and when and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Or do you mind if I go next, Rich? Because I have one on that too.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so a couple more things that we've either clarified or learned about the Mandalorians in this episode. Apparently, it's a sign of your courage that you always, always, always keep your helmet on.
Yeah.
Which was
I was glad to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, because we've talked about whether we think the character is going to keep his helmet on. Now it seems more like he will for a while. It was really interesting because it came up in the context of that challenge where they were, you know, calling him a traitor and a coward, and the armor says, how can one be a coward if one chooses this way of life? Have you ever removed your helmet? No. Has it ever been removed by others? Never. This is the way. So yeah, maybe he won't ever take it off.
I don't know, though. This show kind of, I don't know, I get the feeling that because they've now said that, he will end up taking it off at some point.
Yeah, I would bet yes, but maybe not for a while.
Yeah, I think so. I think this has delayed the possibility or the delayed the time it's going to come off, but I think it probably will. And my feeling is now it's going to be against his will and it will be a huge deal. You know, he'll really struggle against it. So,
but I still, God, there is definitely a part of me that's like, it would be so cool if he just kept it on the whole time. And
yeah, me too.
One thing that makes me feel like that might be a possibility, I was thinking about it and him keeping his mask on all the time puts him in the tradition of a long line of Star Wars actors who were never seen. Kenny Baker as R2-D2, Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, Peter Mayhew as Chewbacca, David Prowse as Darth Vader. They're all like these iconic characters who we have lots of feelings about and that we never saw the actor. So, I mean, a lot of those are a little different because they're droids and Chewbacca's a creature, but with Darth Vader, I guess we did see him take his mask off in the end there.
It came off in the end, yeah. But that doesn't even, you don't even mention like all the aliens and stuff.
I mean,
there's not as many major characters, but plenty of people that we never see the actor for.
Yeah.
But I guess those aren't really masks.
Right.
They're supposed to be creatures. So,
yeah. So who knows? More Mandalorian stuff. So they, Paz Vizsla, who is the one that challenged him, says of his Beskar steel, these are the spoils of the Great Purge, which we've heard about a little bit before. The reason that we live hidden like sand rats, our secrecy is our survival. Our survival is our strength. Our strength was once in our numbers. Now we live in the shadows and only come above ground one at a time. Our world was shattered by the Empire with whom this coward shares tables. So that's a lot of information there that they're kind of hidden, their numbers aren't as great, and it's all because of this Great Purge, which was enacted upon them by the Empire. And I was thinking, how can they live in secrecy when they have to keep their helmets on all the time? But I guess he says, I this is weird, but they can only come out above ground one at a time.
Right.
And so that's
I understand that part.
Yeah, me neither. But I mean, it just seems like, you know, they're not seen that much. And even the client, when he's talking to Mando, when Mando asks him what are his plans for Yoda baby, he says, unfortunately, finding a Mandalorian in these trying times is more difficult than finding the steel. I'm not even sure why he said that, but it was a little piece of information that lets you know that, you know, you don't see a lot of Mandalorians walking around, and it seems like it's because of whatever happened with this Great Purge that forced them underground. But also in this episode, it said, you know, the Empire's gone. And I guess the Mandalorians, I don't know, they chose to come out in the end and support our character. And so I guess they've decided that now is the time for them to come back outside again. Right.
Yeah. They decided that it was more important to come and help them or support them than to stay hidden. Right. And they sacrificed where they're hiding. Because now people, I guess, know they're there, and that was a big point. Although when they mentioned that they only go one out one at a time, I started thinking, seems like it's Mando most of the time.
Yeah. And I feel like he was just talking about their tribe and not their whole culture, but who knows? Maybe that's all of them. Maybe they're all there, all the remaining ones. I don't know.
There was little foundlings. Is that what they're called? They were there.
Oh, they were inside? Yeah.
Yeah.
We saw them in the first episode, at least a couple running around, right?
Yeah.
And speaking of that, the foundlings seem pretty important. He's mentioned a couple times about giving extra Beskar that he brings to help support the foundlings, and that he once was a foundling. And I feel like foundling means orphan, and that he's a war orphan. And I even think that when they're showing these scenes of him as a kid, and which they've shown twice now, or I think only twice, and it's always when his Beskar is being forged into armor. I think that is the Great Purge that they're showing. And I don't know, but it just feels like since they're mentioning the Great Purge and they're showing that it's connected, maybe not. But anyway, we see him that, you know, among people being attacked. And I noticed in this episode, you could see droids were killing people in the street, these big battle droids. And also the doors where he was hidden at the end opened up and there was a droid there. So that's pretty clear to me that that's one reason, at least, why he doesn't like droids.
Yeah, and those droids were the same ones from the prequels, the Clone Wars. So that must have been when this happened.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I wasn't sure if we'd seen those types of droids before, but if they're from the prequel trilogy, that sort of ties that together with them. That's cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, last is that, you get a signet, and I think it's tied to some kind of a great deed that you did, and it gets, like, embossed or imprinted into your armor. And the reason why I think it's a great deed is she heard that he killed one and thought that was impressive, but he says it wasn't an honorable kill, so it doesn't count. So, yeah.
Cool.
That's it.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff on that, too, although we pretty much covered it all. Tribe saves Mando. I like their mantra, this is the way. I know that some are comparing the stormtrooper scene when he went in to get the child, you know, to John Wick, you know, kind of a John Wick-type vibe. But for me, when Mando goes in there to grab the child, it gave me an 80s action movie flavor to it. You know, it kind of goes commando, reminiscent of Schwarzenegger's and Stallone movies. I was like, yeah, you know, they even had the guy you said that Jon Favreau was voicing, the big, thick Mandalorian, you know, he comes in and grabs him by the helmet. They have the whole, you know, who's got the biggest penis scene, you know, and then and then everyone's friends again, and they come to his rescue with jetpacks and giant Gatling guns. I was like, hey, this is cool. A little bit of Commando, a little bit of Rambo, a little bit of Predator in there. A little bit of Action Jackson.
To me, I kept thinking Batman because he keeps like appearing behind people. And, you know, when he's got his gun trained on that doctor, Dr. Pershing, and no, don't kill me. And then he looks up and Mandalorian's just gone.
That's right. Yeah.
And he's got his cape and everything.
We also learned that stormtroopers are still useless, for God's sake.
Yes. They're as useless as ever.
They were never They'll never get it together at all, man. I liked the Stormtrooper battle because of sort of the same. I didn't think of Batman, but the close quarters of going room to room and hiding behind crates and things like that. Mm-hmm. I thought all that was fantastic and really, really fun to watch. And, you know, Mando, he uses his weapons really well.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he got to use different, all different types of, you know, his armory this time. So I thought it was pretty, pretty awesome.
It's almost like he had a utility belt or something.
Yeah, how about that?
He used just about everything he had, I think, in that scene. Even the whistling birds, which he was told to use sparingly just moments before.
Nico kept saying he thought he only used four of them and he still had some left, but I don't know.
Oh, did he have more than four? I didn't catch that.
I don't know.
I was wondering about that because he could have used them at the end again, but he didn't, right? So maybe he didn't use them all up.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe he used them all. By the way, Nico and Bodhi, I mentioned last week, love this show. And Bodhi keeps insisting. For some reason, he calls the Mandalorian bad guy. So he goes, I want bad guy. I want bad guy. And so we've seen the episodes more and more times now because he just wants to watch them over and over again. I was so thankful when this week's came out and we could watch a new one.
Yeah.
Nice.
Maybe well, he sees something that we don't. He's Mando's a bad guy.
I'm like, I think he's a good guy.
Well, kids are very intuitive, man. They pick up on stuff like that.
So what about, since you're mentioning all the action parts, the whole standoff with Greef Karga and the other bounty hunters, I liked it, but it did seem a little ridiculous that none of them could shoot him.
Yeah, I know. Well, he got hit a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. It's good that he had the armor on.
It's well, definitely good, yeah. But he, yeah, I mean, it's a little crazy, but he was hiding in that thing. But when you consider there were guys up on buildings and from every direction, it maybe he should have taken a few more hits, but I still think it was an amazing action scene. And to contrast the one with the stormtroopers, it was all out in the wide open, you know, and I thought that was really fun too. So they did two different action fights here really well.
And maybe it was a little bit of inspired by Butch Cassidy, like being under siege, and it looked pretty hopeless.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think that's what they were going for. I mean, they kind of overdid it a little bit, but you got to make it seem completely hopeless, which they did.
And one thing I'm okay with this, but I definitely have my eye on it, is every episode it's a Deus Ex Machina at the end here. He gets saved by some outside force.
Oh. Yeah, but they set it up sort of with the Mandalorians coming to, like, the rest of them coming to save him. It's, I agree with you, but it's kind of an acceptable one in this case.
Because
they gave us the information about them hiding away and how much of a big deal that was for them to come out and save him. So
that's a good point. You know, it really sort of advanced something about their story. It wasn't just some random.
Yeah. I mean, there was kind of another one in this episode where Greef is saved by the steel in his coat, right? He gets shot, but it actually hits the two plates of Beskar steel in there. I also think that one works okay too, though, because they showed it to us at the beginning.
And they've talked about how strong that steel is. Yeah, I like that.
Totally. Yeah, they set it up. Like, but if they hadn't done that, it would have been totally annoying because it would have come out of nowhere. But they've done a good job of not, you know, surprising us with things that are stupid.
Right.
I do feel like they're, I don't know if they're doing this on purpose, but another thing that makes me okay with him getting saved from somebody else so often is that I kind of mentioned this last week, but hopefully over time he'll get more and more proficient so that he can save himself without any help. And so early on, it's okay if he's not as good at it. So he has somewhere to, you know, ways to grow and things like that.
Sure. Yeah. And come on, he's defending a baby that he has in his arms. Like he might need help with that. You know,
okay. I'm glad that Greef Karga is still alive. I liked his character. I like his character.
Yeah, me too. I do too. What's his name?
How cool would it be to Carl be a jetpack? Wouldn't it be cool to have a jetpack? That scene was awesome.
He's going to get himself one of those.
Yeah. That's another thing is like, this show is like a video game where you gather the resources and then you make your armor and you get a new weapon, but then you use it all up. And he sees this I didn't expect him to get his full suit of armor so quickly, but he got that. And then he still has more stuff to get, though, one of which is the jetpack, which is, you know, Boba Fett had one. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of famous. And I love that he said, I gotta get one of those, because you know he will at some point. He still has to get his signet. Maybe he'll get a helmet antenna, although I feel like they just left that off because they thought it looked dumb.
Well, I mean, is it sort of my turn to go?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the armor and the weaponry a little bit, actually, because I think he already has a really cool arsenal of stuff.
Yeah.
And I made a list. He's got his normal blaster. He's got that big gun, which at short range is kind of like a big taser, right? He can electrocute people with it. But at long range, it disintegrates people, which is bonkers.
Yeah.
He's also got a flamethrower, like the grappling hook sort of, that he can shoot at people and pull them down or pull them closer or whatever. And then, of course, he's got the knife that he used on the Mudhorn.
Yeah.
And, I mean, is there anything else? I mean, that's a pretty cool variety of weapons that he really knows how to use already. Have we seen anything else, though, weaponry-wise?
He's got the whistling birds now.
Well, of course, the whistling birds. But I feel like that was a one-time use thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
But they are awesome. And then the new armor, like you said, Jason, I was a bit surprised that they've given him this new suit so quickly, but the shiny silver armor looks amazing. And, you know, as much as I like the colorful palettes that some of the others have, I think this plain silver is really badass. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool. And I hope he doesn't get it wrecked up again.
I do. Yeah. I wonder if they'll color it. I kind of hope not. I agree. I like the plain silver. I like minimal stuff. At first I was kind of like, I kind of think I like his old sort of dark red armor better, but this really grew on me by the end of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for armor that looks used and lived in a little bit, like he's had it for a long time and it's really part of him, but I think we'll get there with this, and and for now it just looks fresh and new and really makes him menacing, sort of.
Yeah.
I think.
And I love how they've done such a good job of making you feel the preciousness and value of this Beskar steel. They've just talked about the great properties of it, and they have it in these bars, and he had to do so much work just to get one bar, and then when he gets all these stacks of it in this episode, you're like, oh yeah, I wish I could have that, when really you would have nothing to do with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's good stuff, and I didn't expect so much to come all at once, but here we are.
Okay, so I feel like my number two, I feel like that this episode was a really crucial and significant shift for the character, as I mentioned at the beginning. And I really, a lot of the reason why I like this episode was just watching his emotional struggle over what to do. And he was, you know, started off resisting feeling any connection. And that showed itself when he took the knob out of Baby Yoda's hand and picked him up by the scruff of his neck and stuck him back in his little cradle pod. And then when he gets that look on his face, like he's crying like a little baby, that kills me because I have kids.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh God, you're so mean. But he's a bounty hunter, and I'm glad that, you know, he gets to the client's place, and you can see on the little child's face that he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't like it. He's like, what are you doing? Why are you taking me here? That was the look on his face. Like, where are we? And when he gets like carted off and he's looking back and starts crying and it's like, oh, and you can tell that the Mandalorian is having second thoughts, because he tells the stormtrooper, hey, be careful, or go easy on him, or be easy with him, or whatever he said. And then he asks the client what he's going to do with him, which is taboo to even mention that. You know, you're supposed to let it go. But then I was glad, what I was saying before, is that he still took the money and left, because he's a bounty hunter and he's lived his whole life that way. And for him to just that easily change directions would seem kind of cloying, I guess. And so I'm glad it took a little while for him to change his mind.
Yeah, I was actually pretty relieved when he did that. I was like, all right, he's like you said, he's the bounty hunter, you know. I'm sure we'll see the child again in a future episode. I didn't actually expect him to go back for this episode, but...
So yeah, when he did go back, were you disappointed?
A little bit, yeah. Like at the beginning, I said I had a little bit of an issue. That's pretty much it. I'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you're kind of heartless, so I understand.
No, it's not so much that. It's more about how many questions it raises for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing is he takes this bounty to go far away and try to forget about it, and he's going to the ocean dunes of somewhere or other. Like, what's an ocean dune? But then, yeah, when he sees that knob missing, it just reminds him, and he's just like, nope, I can't do it. And in that moment, he's not just deciding. I mean, that's a big deal. I think, who knows what he's deciding? Maybe he's just going to go check on the kid. But then when he sees the crib pod in the dumpster, he's got his gun out, and it's trained on the client and Dr. Pershing. And he's made this huge decision in his life that it's more important for him to protect this baby than anything else. I mean, he's basically risking his life. He starts disintegrating these other bounty hunters. I'm like, man, you just blew your job right there, your whole career.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is a big deal. He's like changing the course of his life by doing this. And then that just sort of cemented itself at the very end when he lets the kid play with the knob. He's just like, he's like, I'm a dad now or something. I don't know where he's going. Like, that's what I'm wondering. Where is he going now? What's he going to do with his life?
Right.
What do you think? Where do you think he's going?
As a character or physically?
Physically in the ship.
Yeah, I don't know. That's sort of the big question here. You know, he's taken off, and I mean, who knows, into hiding somewhere so they can't find him right away. Yeah.
He's going to have all the bounty hunters after him now.
Yeah. He can't be a bounty hunter anymore, right? I don't think so.
No, that's what they've set up for the rest of the season. He has turned his back on the bounty hunters and, you know, decided to save the child. And of course he still has the Mandalorians on his side, which I think is important. Mm-hmm. This is what they've set up for the rest of this season. And it was the single biggest decision he could make for the direction of his character. And this is what they've gone to. So I don't
know.
He's
a hero now. He decided to be a hero instead of a bounty.
Right.
And hopefully it won't be too saccharine after this. But I'm guessing he'll probably try to think of somewhere to drop this kid off, you know, somewhere to leave him where he'll be safe.
Mm. Yeah.
Not just keep him with him, but who knows? Mm-hmm.
That's probably true. But yeah, I heard once somebody say that something like, you know, watching someone do their job is not a story. And so you have to have a character reject their, not their life,
the status quo, basically, right?
Reject the status quo and move on to something else. And so that's kind of what's going on here. You know, he's a bounty hunter. He did his job until this point. This child comes along and it changes his whole outlook.
Do you feel a little bit more forgiving of that first episode just kind of showing him at work now? Or
I mean, I kind of do. That's a good point. Yeah, because we
know
needed,
that's not going to be the status quo now.
Right, but we also needed that baseline of what he does and what
to
kind
see
of
what
guy
he's
he
leaving,
was then.
Kind of.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. To see what he's leaving behind, exactly. And, you know, I didn't... It's unexpected a little bit, too, because it's so big. Like, he completely turned his back on this entire bounty hunter guild. And there's no question about it, right? Like, he is never going back to that at this point.
Yeah. He disintegrated a bunch of them.
Right.
And he tried to kill Greef Karga.
Yeah.
Right. Which, when it comes to Jawas, wasn't that big a deal. But these guys, huge deal.
Hey, haven't you ever wanted to kill your boss, Rich?
Oh, yeah, all the time. No, just kidding. Especially if she's listening. Just kidding. Love you.
Yeah. In fact, I could use a raise.
Okay, Rich. Number two.
Well, my number two was about the armor. We pretty much covered that. I was, like you guys said, it was nice and shiny and silvery. I got chills. I literally got chills when Mando walked into the bar with his shiny new armor. I was like, yeah. I like costumes too. I like cosplay. I just not really enough to do it much, but I do really like cosplay. I know the hardware, you know, the hardware in the Star Wars universe is worn and used and torn, but seeing Mando in the shiny, clean, new armor, I was like, there, okay, here I am. I'm a badass, and here's my armor to prove I'm a badass.
And the other guy's like, everyone hates you right now.
Yeah, everyone's jealous. Come get some.
It all ties back to that. I was going to ask you that, what you dress up as when you go to a Comic-Con, but sounds like you need new ideas.
Yeah, I dressed up once as Ash. I look pretty good, too.
Yeah, he looks badass.
Built a hand chainsaw out of cardboard. Oh, that was pretty cool.
Very cool.
All right, Chris, number one.
Well, my number one, I think, is kind of a question for you guys, because I want you to help me understand something that I didn't quite get in the episode. And that is when he is there with the armorer. Is that what she's called? Who forges the armor for him?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're talking about why he can't get his signet, and he says it wasn't an honorable kill because he had help, and he called the child his enemy. I think he said, I had help from an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks a question, and he says, you know, it didn't know that it was my enemy, or so why would your enemy help you? And he says, it didn't know it was my enemy. So, you know, he's talking to his own people here. He wouldn't lie to them, I don't think. And I don't think he's trying to play an angle or something like that. So I'm trying to figure out what exactly he meant by my enemy. Is it just that this was the asset and he's trying to feel nothing for it so that he can continue to do his job? Or was there more to it than that? That's what I'm not sure about.
I think
that would be my first guess, yeah.
As a bounty hunter, you're just used to thinking of the people that you capture. You have to think of them as, this guy, I can't trust him. He's going to try to hurt me or get away. So everything you do is to make sure that you have control of the situation and that you're safe. So I think the bounty hunters are just used to thinking of them as not their friends, you know? And
I guess so.
But I also think that them choosing to have him say those words was just to show that at this point in the story, he hasn't fully come over to the way of thinking that he needs to protect this thing. He's still kind of in denial about the situation, or trying to
convince
maintain
himself.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that makes some sense. I mean, I can see why you would want to think of someone you're bringing in as your enemy, so you don't get attached to them or anything like that,
or you don't get hurt. Yeah.
Or don't get hurt.
I mean, even if obviously he knew he wasn't going to get hurt by Baby Yoda, but I'm just saying, as a habit, you just sort of in your job put things into categories, you know, and he's just used to thinking of his bounties as his enemy, I think.
Okay.
Well, if he's a lone bounty hunter, I guess everybody would be his enemy. Like,
well,
everybody.
Almost everybody is now, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, my number one, I've had this item in all of them because it's really fun for me to, it's lore and callbacks, just to see how all this stuff relates to either Star Wars lore or things that have happened in other movies and things like that. So callbacks, when the Mandalorian first receives his assignment a couple episodes ago, the client promised to pay him with a Camp Tono of Beskar, and Camp Tono, I think, is just a Star Wars word. And in this episode, we see that the Beskar is in this carrier that looks like it's a cylinder. And that looks like something we saw before in Empire Strikes Back during the evacuation of Cloud City. A man runs by carrying what everyone always thought looked like an ice cream maker, and we didn't know what it was or what it was for. And so I was reading this article on Polygon.com. It speculated on how Jon Favreau and the writers may have come up with the name Camp Tono for this carrier, because there's this YouTube video that came out a couple of years ago with this guy and his daughter, and I'll play it for you right now.
Say, I love ice cream.
Camp Tono.
I want Ice cream.
Gantono.
Gantono. Say, Delta.
Delta.
Eat.
Eat.
Ice cream.
Gantono.
What the heck are you saying? Say, ice.
Ice.
Cream.
Cream.
Say, I.
I.
Want.
Want.
Ice cream.
Gantono.
That's it.
That's amazing.
So I think there's a pretty good chance he got it from that.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's super funny.
Gantono. Doesn't sound anything like ice cream.
I know. So funny. What's going on in that kid's head?
Kids.
So, and then also in this episode, when Grief Karga's trying to talk him, just, you know, hey, why don't you just chill out and go, you know, relax for a while? He says, buy a Camtono of spice, and by the time you get back, you'll have forgotten about everything. Spice is a illicit substance, a narcotic, and it's the reason why Han Solo had a bounty on him from Jabba the Hutt, because he ditched a shipment of spice to avoid trouble with the Empire. So that's why he's in trouble with Jabba in the first three movies.
Yeah, I'll be darned.
So spice is an illicit substance.
That's what I read.
Because you also hear about the spice mines of Kessel or something, and I feel like that's not something else. I don't know.
I think they're mining drugs, but I'm not positive about that. I will go back and double check to make sure.
I guess they have to get them from somewhere.
Yeah. Trying to eat the little silver metal ball, the knob from the lever of the ship, and just pulling it off of that, it made me think of how Yoda was such a troublemaker when Luke first met him in Empire Strikes Back, messing with all his stuff, you know,
right,
trying to eat everything. And he was doing that just to test Luke's patience, but I feel like now I'm thinking, maybe it wasn't so much a total act as also just sort of reverting to his normal childlike nature or something like that.
Yeah,
he was just 900 years old.
Yeah.
It's just part of their nature that they fiddle with stuff and try to eat things.
Let's see. When the Guildmaster Grief Karga says that all the other bounty hunters had those fobs and they were, you know, tasked with going after the child, but only the Mandalorian closed the deal. Only you were the one able to close the deal. And he says it right in front of all the other bounty hunters. One of them says, Ichuta. Yeah. And that comes from this scene in Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, nice to see a familiar face.
Ichuta.
How rude.
Which I think it means, well, I can't say because I should beep that out, huh?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's vulgar.
It's foul language.
Means go away.
The guildmaster tells him to take some time off. He says, I'll take you to the Twi'lek healing baths. Twi'leks are the female ones are usually green or blue or orange, and they have those two appendages coming off the back of their heads. And, you know, the famous one is the slave dancer from Jabba the Hutt.
Right.
And the females are usually thin and beautiful, and they've become enslaved a lot because of that. And they end up in industries like that, I guess.
Strangely alluring.
Yeah.
Female Twi'lek. Twi'lek.
The black spherical thing that Dr. Pershing had when the child was in that sort of scanning device or whatever it was. You guys recognize that, right?
That's an Imperial interrogation droid, of course.
Yeah. Yep.
From the scene where Darth Vader questioned Princess Leia, which we never saw. They didn't show us that, but I read that she was injected with this mind-altering hallucinogen that made her susceptible to suggestion, but still her fortitude was so strong that she didn't give up any information. But I was wondering what they were doing with it in there. Like, it didn't really make sense in that scene unless the child can talk.
Yeah, you wouldn't think they would need that device on the child, especially since it was strapped to the table and appeared to be unconscious.
Yeah, at least unless it has some other uses, injecting him with stuff for some other reason.
Yeah, maybe it can either be a interrogation droid or sort of a nurse in an operating room.
Yeah, but it definitely,
maybe it's just a crib toy.
It gives you a feeling when you see it, like, oh, get rid of that thing.
Oh, yeah.
Hate that thing. Crib toy.
It's the first thing he shot when he came into the room, I think, right? So,
The speeder driver droid, that was, I think, an R5 unit, which according, because the R5 ones have the more like sphere, conical
squared.
Shaped head or, yeah. What's that shape? A cylinder, like cylinder heads. Anyways, according to Wikipedia, R5 units are cut price versions of the superior R2 units. They were low cost, but plagued with malfunctions, prone to defects, and bad attitudes.
As we know, they have bad motivators.
Yeah.
Right?
Is that what? Yeah, because the first one Luke took from the Jawas.
Yeah, it blows up and he goes, Uncle
blows
Owen.
The circuit.
Or, it's got a bad motivator.
All right, we'll take that one. Oh, yes.
Sounds like a Microsoft product.
And that's about all I got for that one.
That's a lot of stuff, though. Every episode has
all
kinds of stuff like this in it.
Do you guys like hearing that, or is it kind of boring?
Yeah, no, I do, because I didn't even realize half of that stuff.
Me too. When you first started, I'm like, oh, good, Jason's going to do this again. And it's good. It's great information.
All right, I'll keep doing it. I have a feeling there's going to continue to be a lot of stuff.
Yeah, tons.
All right, any other notes, Chris?
Yeah, I love the opening shot of the starfield kind of spinning, and then the ship pops out of light speed right in the center. I thought that looked really cool, and really sort of Star Warsy, which was nice. I think they have just absolutely nailed the cuteness factor on the child, which we already kind of knew, but the way it made more noises and moved around a little bit more this episode, and everything about it is adorable. In a way, it steals the show a little bit when it's on screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've done that really well.
Apparently it did with the actors too. Like the guy who plays the client is Werner Herzog, who's this acclaimed actor and isn't usually in stuff like this. And whenever he's in an interview, he's just like, oh, that thing was just heartbreakingly beautiful and broke my heart.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is. They've nailed that for sure. I noticed some subtle differences in the Mandalorians' masks, like the different Mandalorians, and some have slightly bigger eye holes, not eye holes, but, you know, the sort of visor-ish type thing. Mm-hmm. Some have smaller, slightly different shapes, but they all have the basic same structure. I don't know. I just sort of like that. I was wondering to myself, do the different masks represent something in their culture, like rank or experience or anything like that? I don't know.
I'm not sure about that, but I do know that the Mandalorian culture has gone back since before the forming of the Empire, which was over 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And when you see the masks sometimes of the earlier ones, it looks like an ancient culture where they're more crude and there's spikes coming out of them sometimes, but there's always that inverted T opening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always there, but it changes a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just like the variety in them. Mm-hmm. And the last one was, Grief getting saved by the steel in his coat. And we already talked about that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do a couple. When Mando tells Grief Karga that the client works for the Empire, and Grief says the Empire's gone, all that's left are warlords and mercenaries, but if it bothers you, you can report them to the New Republic. Mando says that's a joke. And so I'm like, I think what he means there is that the New Republic is kind of a joke, and maybe that's just like they don't care about the planets on the fringe, on the outer rim, you know?
Those are the planets that are constantly neglected, if we've learned anything.
Yeah. I mean, and as far as the whole Empire thing, the client has this necklace that has the Imperial symbol on it. So I don't think that means necessarily that the Empire is still around, but maybe just fragments of it and he's like a warlord.
I think it just means that he's former Empire and he still wears that thing as almost like the glory days.
Yeah.
Or something. Maybe that's true too.
Trying to figure out what they were doing with Baby Yoda. The client said, I order you to extract the necessary material and be done with it. And Dr. Pershing says he, whoever that is, has explicitly ordered us to bring it back alive. Are they extracting midichlorians?
Well, I don't know. I mean, did they actually call it material, or did they just say something like extract what you need? I don't know.
I don't know for sure.
I I feel like it was so vague, but at the same time makes you think, I mean, what could they possibly be? Is there something about this species that, you know, they have DNA that people need or
yeah.
who knows what? But I mean, midichlorians is the most obvious one because we've apparently they exist in this Star Wars universe. What could they want them for? Or yeah, can you even extract them? I don't know.
Yeah. You extract it and you put it in a pipe and smoke it. Go ahead.
that would be cool. All right. So this child thing, right? It raises a lot of questions for me. When Mando first walks in to grab the baby Yoda, Dr. Pershing is like worried that Mando is there to kill the baby, not rescue it. When he goes cowering on the ground, why? Why would he be worried that Mando is there to kill the baby? Are they trying to clone it? That's what I got from all this, is maybe they're trying to clone that little fella. And how long is this kid going to be the hook and anchor for the show? That worries me a little bit. You know, how many times will yeah. Mando have to save it from an impossible situation? Or how many times will Baby Yoda save Mando from an impossible situation? I don't want to watch Mando be a babysitter, is what it boils down to. And most of all, Mando better not take off his helmet to make googly eyes at this kid. that would ruin it for me.
Yeah, that would be the worst thing to happen. But, you know, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe we talked about it before, that there's some sort of innate force ability in this species. And maybe that's what they're trying to do, even if they don't go to midichlorian specifically. Like, maybe their cloning is a good thought, actually. Like, if they're trying to clone and create a group of these force-using creatures, I don't know. You know, there's all kinds of possibilities.
I mean, it's a thing in the Star Wars universe. There's a lot of cloning going on.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
Not only that, but I read, and one of the listeners mentioned it later too, that Dr. Pershing has apparently a symbol on his outfit that Jango Fett also had on Kamino. And Kamino is the planet where they are cloning experts, and they made all of the clone troopers based on Jango Fett. Oh, so right. People are suspecting that that means that Baby Yoda may actually be a clone of Yoda, but maybe it's not. And maybe you guys are right that they just want to clone Baby Yoda. I think that's actually more likely, that they're trying to extract material to clone it. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. But if it is a clone of Yoda, honestly, I could see them going that way too. That would make him pretty important in the galaxy. So,
And then we'll be more correct calling him Baby Yoda.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Or we could call him Clone Yoda.
Be so mad anymore.
Did I skip your number one? Was that it, Rich?
Yeah, that was it. I'm sorry. I thought I'd throw it in there since we were talking about it.
Good job. Do you have any other notes?
I had one. Remember when he was walking towards, at the beginning of the episode, he landed his ship and he took Baby Yoda in his little cradle, and he was walking him towards the client, and you saw Jawas. There were Jawas on other planets. Mm-hmm. We talked about that last time.
Yeah, more Jawas. That's right.
Yeah, they're just apparently scattered across the galaxy in all the grimiest places.
Yeah, there you go. They're everywhere.
I had two more. That extending ball that juts out and says rude things to people whenever they come to the client, and there was also one at Jabba's palace. I wish I had one of those for my front door that would just jut out and be like,
instead of the Ring doorbell, huh? I had one of those.
Yeah,
right.
Whenever
it was satisfying when he pulled the end off of it, though.
Yeah, that's true. Break that.
Plus, thing. You know, this episode started out in space. I have a hypothesis. Any show that starts out in space is going to be good.
That's interesting. The last one I have is the little metal ball that went on the end of the lever. I saw that the day after I watched the unveiling of the new Tesla Cybertruck. Did either one of you guys watch that?
Not live,
no,
but...
No. I saw the picture. I didn't see the video.
Yeah, you can't avoid the thing, but I didn't watch it live.
It's crazy if you guys listening haven't seen it. Elon Musk said it looked like something out of Blade Runner, and it totally does. It's insane. But the thing is, he's been talking about this truck for a few years, and tonight, or last night, was the unveiling. And, you know, so they've been building to it for a while. And they were talking about how tough the truck is because they want to compare it to the Ford F-150. And so they took a door of an F-150 and bashed a sledgehammer against it and put a dent in it. Then they bashed the hammer against the Tesla truck and nothing happened, of course. And then they wanted to talk about the armor glass. So it's like supposed to be actually transparent metal or something like that. And so they took these big steel balls and dropped it on a plate of normal glass and it cracked. And then they dropped it on a plate of the Tesla glass and it just bounced off. And then I go, let's try it on the actual truck. So the guy, and I'm like, can I see the specs here? I want to know, you know, what this thing costs, what the range is and stuff. So the guy, the designer takes the ball and throws it at the window and it just huge crack spread across the window of the truck.
Oops.
I was like, God damn it. I saw this meme on, and then he's like, let me try the back window, and the back one cracked too. And I saw this meme, funny memes on Twitter, but the best one was, which was the worst product rollout? And it showed a picture of the Tesla one, and then it showed a picture of the big robot from RoboCop.
Like, I mean, everyone died in that one, so.
It was the same feeling, though.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Wow. I heard a lot of people believe that this was all set up to generate, you know, social media clicks and stuff like that. That they totally knew it was going to smash.
Yeah, they say there's no such thing as bad press.
Yeah,
right.
It wasn't. You could tell Elon Musk, he just zipped through the rest of the presentation and you could tell he was going to go back and yell at somebody. But I think it may have had that effect because most people are like, well, it doesn't really matter if the glass broke when you threw a steel ball at it. Let's find out about the truck. So I think it did end up giving it a lot of publicity that it wouldn't have otherwise had.
It certainly did, but I'll trust you that it wasn't a setup.
Job opening.
All right, I think that's pretty good. Let's take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it.
Okay, we're back. It's time for some news. The New York Times interviewed episode 3 director Deborah Chow. They said this third episode felt like it was tying together an opening arc that potentially upends the audience's expectations of the story that The Mandalorian might tell. How did you prepare to direct it? She says, I had a great episode, and then I get to show the character's moral turning point, the moment when everything changes for him. It's all been building up to that moment in the cockpit when the Mandalorian decides to return for the baby. Jon Favreau knew that that was an incredibly pivotal scene. That's the point of no return. Once he makes that decision right there, he's changing his entire life. Kind of what we already said, yeah. They say, were there any films or other works you looked at for reference as you prepared for your episode? She goes, for episode 3, when I first read the script, it felt like a Western and a samurai movie. So I watched a lot of Kurosawa. There's obviously a pretty strong Yojimbo feel going on with the street battle. And obviously a lot of those where George Lucas's references to. I also brought in a little of John Woo's Hard Boiled with the baby in that movie. I had grown up with a lot of that. My dad was Chinese, and I grew up with a lot of Hong Kong action movies. They say, you're often working with characters who are masked. Does that present particular challenges for your actors or for you as a director? She goes, it's definitely more challenging. A lot of the way we worked with Pedro, and that's part of what Dave and I were trying to get the hang of when we started shooting, is his physicality became incredibly important. We had to develop a language of physicality. There's a lot of stillness in the character. All his movement is intentional. There's no fidgeting or relaxing, so that anytime, even if he makes a small move or turns his head, it becomes meaningful. We couldn't do it with his face or with his eyes. It also becomes critical as a director to use the camera to support that emotionally, to help convey what he's feeling a lot of the times. it's interesting when you hear that, because I didn't consciously know it, but I do like how he barely talks and his movements are intentional, like she's saying. When you look at an episode script, it's really short because a lot of the episode is people doing things rather than talking, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an amazing point, actually, because when he's sitting in that cockpit and even rest of the episode, you never doubt what's going through his mind, even though you can't see his face. And that is a feat of filmmaking, I think. That's really, really special. And they do it through, as you said, the body language and
music,
his movements, his music, reactions of other characters, and his reactions to them in turn. So it's amazing what they've been able to portray without showing his face. I think it proves that it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Because I mean, you might doubt whether it would work before you actually try it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of symbolism and props too.
And people haven't even had the balls to do it really before. It's like the Spider-Man thing we mentioned. They keep taking it off because they're like, oh, we don't think we can get this right. But they obviously can here.
Yeah. Business Insider interviewed the Mandalorian composer Ludwig Göransson, who also did the music for Creed and Black Panther. And when planning the music with Jon Favreau, Göransson said Favreau, quote, talked about Seven Samurai, Kurosawa, Leone, which those are the Clint Eastwood movies, I think, spaghetti western, and this dystopian punk world that the story is set in. He said he decided to go back to basics, so he spent 2 months in his studio experimenting with 5 different kinds of recorder woodwind instruments. He says, I hadn't played a recorder since I was 7 or 8, but when I played the bass recorder, it just had this sound and this tone that I wasn't familiar with. I was drawn to it. So he recorded those sounds and began distorting it through his production equipment, and it produced a sound that he gravitated to because you couldn't tell what type of instrument was playing it. Perfect for a galaxy far, far away. He then went back to play them for Favreau and the show's executive producer, Dave Filoni. Quote, I played them the first song, which ended up being the Mandalorian theme, and it starts with the recorders. After 1 second of playing it, John and Dave looked at each other like, that's perfect. So yeah, he was off and running. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I can imagine that moment.
I don't know if you guys down in the States have to play the recorder in school, but up here in Canada, just about every kid does. We play the recorder as our like first instrument in school. And I am just excited to hear that the recorder has finally been used for something good, because I never imagined it would be.
Other than turning you off of music for the rest of your life.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, after I read that and then I watched the episode again today, I'm like, oh yeah, I think that's a recorder. So you can hear it. And it goes on. He also began to realize that the score needed to tell a story, because of the show's main character. Quote, we have a main character with a helmet on, so you don't see any facial expressions. I pretty much understood from the get-go that the music is the facial expressions of the Mandalorian.
That's cool.
He made different scores for all 8 episodes, which I think is pretty cool. A couple more. CNET, from CNET.com, they say Disney will soon be launching merchandise based on Baby Yoda.
No way.
Yeah. Surprise.
Hot seller.
They had not done it because they were trying to keep the whole thing under wraps before the debut, but it says pre-orders for Baby Yoda toys and a plush will begin in the coming weeks. No details.
Black Friday.
Maybe. No details on where they'll be sold as yet, but then more toys, plush, specialty apparel, and other merchandise will also become available in the coming months. Breakfast cereal, probably.
This is Disney. The better question is, where will it not be sold?
Right.
Right? This thing is going to sell pretty well, I think.
And then last, we haven't talked about it, but it's been known. I don't know if you guys knew, but Disney Plus is also going to be launching a series about Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I'm looking forward to that.
Starring Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor.
It's set 8 years after Revenge of the Sith, which is 11 years before A New Hope. Deborah Chow, who directed this episode we just talked about, is going to direct the series alongside Hossein Amini, who wrote the series. And it's season 1 is 6 episodes at 1 hour each. Scripts apparently have been completed, but it's set to begin filming July of next year. So the launch date hasn't yet been announced, but I'm guessing it won't be for a while, maybe late 2021 or more likely sometime in 2022. So we have a while to wait for it, I think.
Cool. Lots I love of to time. Hate that guy.
Lots of time for anticipation to grow.
You love to hate Ewan?
Yeah. From He's what? One of those guys that just has it all, you know. Everything he touches turns to gold. It's like, really? Talented and good-looking, got a great family life, decides to ride his motorcycle around the world and film it. So he makes money on riding his motorcycle around the world instead of paying for it. I hate that guy.
He's got this, like, a smile where you think it's one of his teeth is going to sparkle.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he's a really good actor, though.
There was a movie he made a long time ago. Oh, my God, I can't remember the name of it now, but he goes full frontal naked in it.
Right. He's got a big too. Is that what we're talking about?
There was a time when a lot of people I knew were calling him Unit McGregor.
He actually broke up with his wife and started dating this hot young actress from Fargo. Dang, I forgot her name, but she was also in that movie with John from Roseanne.
Goodman?
Yeah, John Goodman. The one where
Cloverfield Lane?
Yeah.
That movie?
You remember the girl in that?
I do.
Yeah.
He's with her now?
They're together as a couple, and they starred together in the last season of Fargo, which was excellent, by the way.
Mm. Oh. Great okay. Show. Well,
wish I could remember her name.
Sucks that he broke up with his wife, but who am I to judge him?
Right. We don't know the details of it.
Exactly.
But we can still hate him.
Love to hate him.
Right. Love to hate him, yeah. And look forward to his series and watch them all. All right, let's move on to some listener feedback. Should we go in the same order?
Remind me which that was.
You.
Okay.
You, me, then Rich.
All right, Grippy Bob Dobolino says, this show is getting better and better. Where episodes 1 to 3 and every other single piece of Star Wars content since 1983 were only base hits at best, this show is a grand slam. Oh, baseball, I get it now. best thing since episodes 4 to 6 and Rogue One. Also, that special feature he got that took out the stormtroopers that surrounded him, Iron Man 1 basic feature.
yeah. A little shade at the end there.
Yeah, good a call. Little bit.
Cheryl Morales says, I'm loving everything about this. I paid special attention to the music this episode based on your conversations. It's a perfect combination of Star Wars and spaghetti Western. It really is perfect. The sounds Baby Yoda make are the cutest thing. He reminds me of a gremlin. Heart.
Don't get it wet after midnight. Bianx Vargas writes in, number one, she has a list. Didn't the music in the beginning when he was on board the ship remind you of Luke's theme?
I have no clue.
Number two, I cried more looking inside that dumpster than when I wasn't sure if Glenn was still alive.
Okay. He was under a dumpster, so yeah. I see where the connection is there.
Number three, after more than 40 years, Imperial stormtroopers still don't get any respect.
And don't deserve it.
And don't
deserve it. They're terrible. All right, Damien Vitale says, best episode yet. Not sure, but it sounds like they wanted to extract something from Lil Yoda. Midichlorians, maybe? The new Mandalorian armor and weapons are badass. My kids and I laughed when the charged stormtrooper hit the ground. Wonder where the story will go with the Empire and the Bounty Hunter Guild chasing our hero and spunky sidekick.
You know, I'm thinking less. I think I was worried about midichlorians because no one really loves that concept except maybe George Lucas. But I really feel like it's a cloning thing now. I think that's what it is.
Now that we've kind of talked about it a bit, it does seem like it's pretty likely.
Yeah. Alicia Stout says, well, so now we know who hired the other bounty hunters. All of them.
Yep.
And yes, please, I would also like a jetpack to fly. The cute bond between the child and Mando is just so awesome, and I love it so much. Can I just give him a hug, please?
Casey Robertson. First off, what an episode. Favreau keeps getting better and better with each episode. Really digging the cereal/spaghetti western feel of each show. I love how they are adding the mythos of the Mandalorian culture. His new armor is badass, and I don't know about you, but I got chills when the rest of the Mandos came flying in. As for Baby Yoda, yes, he's very cute, but the cynic in me is afraid Disney is using him just to keep viewers. I hope I'm wrong, because I do love the gunslinger and the innocent he must protect. Looking forward to the podcast.
Don't worry, Disney is absolutely using him to keep viewers.
And sell merchandise.
Yeah. Is there any question?
Yeah, I mean, what do you... I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think they're like, let's make the cutest thing possible so everyone will think he's cute and love watching him, and that'll make them want to see the show more. That's what they're doing. But I do agree with you, Rich, that I don't know if I want the whole show to be about that. I mean, I'm keeping an open mind, but... I kind of hope that he moves on to other things. And then I'm kind of worried that if everyone fell so in love with this creature that they're not going to like the show as much if he's not on it anymore.
Yeah.
They'll wrap it up somehow satisfactorily. And then maybe Baby Yoda won't be a part of season two. Mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I agree that, you know, when all the Mandalorians came flying in with the jetpacks, it was, you know, chill inducing. The only part cool. that I didn't really love was as he's leaving and the one flies up beside him to kind of salute and then go off. That felt a little cheesy to me.
Oh, really?
It reminded me of Rocketeer, but I still liked it, especially when he said, I need to get me one of those that...
I suppose it was worth it for that line,
Yeah, I think that was the setup right there.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right, Alex Baelish writes, oh my God, yes, last scene was so cool. Interesting twist to the story as well. Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West. Paik Allen says, really loved it. Each episode just gets better and better. This was a pretty violent episode for a Disney show. Haha. More disintegrations. Yeah, they do mass killings every episode of this show. Somehow make it okay for my 2-year-old. Anyways, looks like Armando has become the John Wick of the galaxy far, far away. And also, he's an adoptive father now.
Yeah. Reba Joe writes in, loved this episode. Seems the Mandalorian relates to Baby Yoda. This is what we have to call him for now, right? In the same way as he was a kid, alone in the world. I like that he has a heart. Super cool to see other Mandalorians and that they have each other's back, and super cool jetpacks. Were we not supposed to have those by now? Get on that, Elon.
That's a great point, yeah, that he might connect on that level because he was also abandoned as a child or left alone.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't even make that connection until Rima Joe pointed it out. So good job. Brian Maloche writes, I didn't care much for the first 2 episodes. I'm glad I didn't give up on this show. Holy crap, that was good.
And then we have an email from Todd Hill. Hi, Jason, Rich, and Chris. I love the podcast and the show has been amazing so far. I just wanted to share a little something I noticed in the first episode. I saw a patch on the arm of the scientist when the Mandalorian was talking to Werner Herzog. I looked into it and saw that it was a Kamino symbol. So you're probably wondering, yeah, so? But it actually made me squeal with excitement. Why, do you ask? Because Kamino is where they cloned Jango Fett and where they created the clone army. I think that the Yoda baby is actually a clone of Yoda. I hope I'm right. I love that you guys are covering the show, and I look forward to the next podcast. Thanks, guys. Mm. Yeah, my sense, cloning. Yeah, I think maybe it's not a clone, but they're going to clone it, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. And then last, we got a call from Steve Brown.
Hey guys, it's Steve, and I wanted to send this in. I only watched the episode once, but it was so good. Chapter 3, The Sin. What sin do you think they're talking about? The sin of him breaking the code and asking about the child, or the sin of actually going into the client's place and retrieving the child? That was really, really cool. I love that brief fight he had with, according to the closed captioning, heavy infantry was what the Mandalorian that he was fighting with was called. I loved at the end when they all just showed up and he had that huge gun and the whole "This is the way" chanting is just, I'm just loving this show more and more. It's like every episode gets a little bit better. I hope we're going to see the next episode is him fulfilling the contract that he started with the Carl Weathers character. Who? How cool was that? That Carl Weathers was saved by the Beskar in his shirt. That's why he didn't die when Mando. Which I've come to think that it's not a slur. I think we talked about it. Maybe it was an insult for them to call him Mando, but he doesn't correct anybody, and lots of people call him that. Like, good guys, bad guys, they all say Mando. So I think it's just a thing. And I love that they gave us a very quick couple lines of dialogue that showed us what was going on, that they've been in hiding, only one of them can go out at a time, but then this whole big group comes out to save him, and even though they're going to lose their place, and Heavy Infantry says, you know, this is the way. Just loved it. Can't wait to see next week what happens, and can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Yeah, we started calling him Mando on the podcast too, I noticed. I think this episode might be the first time. I feel like that's it's not a slur. And
no.
They needed something to call him.
Yeah, exactly. You need a short version. Everyone has a short version of their name, nickname.
It's his work name.
Are you Christopher?
I am officially, yes.
Officially. And you're Richard?
Yeah.
And I assume you're Jaceroni.
Jasonaroni.
Oh, sorry, Jasonaroni. Right. Missed a syllable there.
Thanks, Steve. All right, Rich, what's coming up next week?
Okay, next week is titled For Now, Chapter 4. And the tagline is, the Mandalorian teams up with an ex-soldier to protect a village from raiders. It's directed by Bryce Dallas Howard and written by Jon Favreau.
Hmm. Bryce Dallas Howard? She's famous. Wow. Yeah.
That's Ron Howard's daughter.
Yeah, I didn't know she directed stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much she's directed, but she's directing this one.
Cool.
And say the first part again. He teams up with who?
The Mandalorian teams up with an ex-soldier to protect a village from raiders.
Sounds like he's in the A-team now. He's going to go around doing good deeds.
I think we're going to get introduced to another regular.
I think it's going to be Gina Carano.
I think so too, but I'm looking forward to that because I've kind of been wondering where these other characters are, and I'm just to see them. Yeah.
He's going to need, he's going to need to build a team. You're right, because he's going to have the whole galaxy after him.
Right. That's true.
Need some backup.
That is our show. Thank you for listening, everybody. Totally appreciate it. I'm glad we're getting a lot of comments and stuff. That's really fun. This show's, I think, turning into a big hit. A lot of people there's a lot of buzz about it.
It's amazing.
Sweet.
People like it. All right. If you want to write in or record a message that we'll play back on the podcast, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And of course, we're also on Twitter and Instagram at House Podcastica.
And please check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. And you can find Chris at talkingdeadpodcast.com, where he talks about The Walking Dead with his co-host Jason, who is not me. And speaking of that, I just wanted to ask, without spoiling it, what did you think of last week's Walking Dead? I haven't listened to your episode yet.
Last week's, as in number 7?
Yeah.
I thought it was great. In fact, I have thought season 10 so far has all been great. But it was very, very good. And I don't know if I should say any more than that, but I've seen the mid-season finale already. And that's all I'll say.
Is it any good? You don't want to say if it's good?
I don't, honestly. Okay, it's a big deal to spoil things for people. And some people even think an opinion is a spoiler. So
okay. I want to go watch it. Yeah, okay. I respect that. But last week episode blew me away. I was floored.
Yeah. I mean,
it's good.
It was good.
Yeah, we'll just say that.
That's cool.
Very well. That is our show.
Thank you for listening.
This is the way.
This is the way.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.